everybody, get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Foodie and the Beast with Dave and Nikki Nellis. We've got a jam-packed show today, but Nikki wants to talk about something we did last night.
Well, I don't want to talk about what we did last night. I just want to say it's White House Correspondents Weekend, and the city is on fire with all these fabulous parties and great dinners happening all over the place. David and I were able to go to the DC Magazine party last night at the Women's History Museum, and it was just fabulous. Lots of great dresses, lots of great fun, and we wound up at Casa Teresa afterwards for some nachos. Okay.
Here. Not too shabby. It was a lot of fun. All right. So joining us this morning from Montgomery County is Anae Simmons. It's the merry month of May in MoCo. They're celebrating small businesses and the entrepreneurial spirit. She's got a lot to tell us about there. Our drink segment, we always have drinks on this show. John Dinan's with us. He's the sales and education manager for Spirits at Prestige LaDroite, our buddies there. Hello,
and
Chris.
And he is educating us today on tequila and mezcal, so it's going to be really exciting.
Chef Enrique Limardo is with us. He's the co-founder and chief culinary officer at Seven Reasons Group. That's Imperfecto and lots of others. He's literally a rock star. He recorded a rock album, but he's also a rock star chef. And he's Venezuela's first Michelin-starred chef in the U.S. We got a lot to talk about with him. Mm-hmm. Our old buddy Sebastian Sebi Zutant is with us. Mm-hmm. He's really D.C.'s legendary somm. He's the man who started it all at Proof, and now he's co-owner at Primrose, which is a French wine bar bistro.
He was also at Comey.
You were
at Comey.
That's right. We met you at Comey, didn't we?
Anyways,
we're going to hear about there's a revamp happening at Primrose. So, Veg Restaurant Week is coming. You want to know about that? You're going to hear from Molly Gibson and her mom, Melissa Pepe. They're owners of Rooted 3 in Bethesda, where you get very healthy, feel-good, plant-based foods.
It's new, too. It's really new.
Brand new, yeah. Mm-hmm. Good spot in Bethesda, too. Yeah. And with them is Mary Beth Olson of MBO Media, and she's the co-founder of DC Veg Restaurant Week, so you'll get all the details there. And lastly, but not leastly, our old buddy restaurateur Eric Bergman is in. With Chef Yo Matsu.
That's a good title for Eric.
Well,
yeah,
he's a
restaurateur. Okay.
Chef Yo from Ren in Tyson's Corner. We've eaten at Ren a couple of times. Great food there. Mm-hmm. They have a special event coming up for the Derby. You're going to want to hear about that.
Okay, let's get into
Let's talk to Anae.
MoCo. Oh, my God. I love this month because you guys have so much going on at Visit Montgomery. So tell us about what's going on.
We are celebrating Go MoCo Month in May. So again, we're celebrating local businesses, entrepreneurial spirit within the county. So we have four themed weeks. So we have Shop MoCo Week, which is the first week, MoCo Eats Week, which is the second, MoCo Hotel Week, and the kickoff to summer. But I'm going to kind of dive a little bit deeper into Shop MoCo and MoCo Eats Week.
Well, you know, just to be clear, like shop and eat both appeal to me. So I think we should talk about those.
Oh, I think that was a joke.
It wasn't a joke. It's reality. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, we can definitely dive into the deep into that. All right. Mm-hmm. So May 1st to 10th is Shop MoCo Week. So we're going to celebrate local businesses, small businesses. It's actually coinciding with National Small Business Week. Hmm. So this is some of the deals and discounts that we have. It was free to all participants who signed up. So for an example, Joyful Bathco, they're offering 20% off. So if you like, you know, your bath bombs, showers, steamers, things like that, you're going to have, you know, a great time with that discount. Mm-hmm. One big discount that I do want to mention to everyone, Oak Barrel and Barrel, or all the ABS stores, are offering 10% discount for the whole month. So
really?
It's not just for Shop MoCo Week. So, yeah, so it's all,
so
you know, your
where
locally
made
products.
Where do we find all this? Like, where's all this info? I mean, other than the list, areyouwanted.com, obviously. Where do we find all this info? Tell us about the app. Like, how can people, like, really engage with everything you guys are doing?
So you can download the Visit MoCo Adventure Planner app. It could be found on the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. And that's where you can find all the passport and deals, so all the deals and discounts for all the weeks. If you check into that, you can be registered for the Ultimate Go MoCo Giveaway, which you could win a prize up to $1,000.
Great.
And then you can also go on visitmontgomery.com/go-moco. Mm-hmm. That has all of, you know, the deals, discounts, and everything that you need to know.
Great. And then you're going to join us next week because we'll hit up and we'll talk about Hotel Week and what kickoff to summer is. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Greatly appreciate it.
Yeah. No
John Dinan. Yes. Man, do you do spirit fingers too? Because you're, I thought
spirit
so.
Finger, jazz finger.
All right, so you're the sales and education manager of spirits at.
But
Prestige.
I want so you're coming in today with mezcal and tequila, and we had a real interesting conversation before the show about like the designation of the two. So can you just dive right into that?
Yeah, I mean the simple thing is like most people, mezcal is kind of an up and coming category, and you think most people who hear mezcal, right in the top of their head, it's always oh mezcal,
so
smoky tequila. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Which is, it's not wrong, but it's not right. I mean, when you get down to the nitty gritty of it, like tequila is a mezcal. So the way you got to look at it is all tequilas are mezcals, not all mezcals are tequilas.
Okay.
In order to be tequila, you have to follow a certain number of rules.
Who knew we were going to get a philosophy lesson in the middle?
No, it's the same way. Like look at bourbon in the world right now. Bourbon's monstrous. But in order to be bourbon, you have to follow a set of rules. And the same thing works with tequila versus mezcal. So the easy way to look at it is tequila can be made from one type of agave plant out of one state and has to be cooked one way.
And what are those?
So it has to be made in the state of Jalisco, has to be used Blue Weber agave, mm-hmm. and it has to be oven or steam cooked.
Okay.
And that's, you'll earn your tequila designation.
Well, I want to say you poured us a shot, smooth as silk.
Yeah.
But was
real
this tequila
good.
Or?
The first tequila we drank was called Arete. And we'll get into it a little bit more.
Wait, Arete means stop, doesn't it?
No.
What does it mean?
Horse.
That's
horse.
Arete is French.
Yeah, oh. Arete vu is stop. But yeah, so.
I'm
a man of the world.
John, let me ask you, seriously, où est la toilette?
No, but so as you see on the bottle, the horse there, the horse's name was Arete. Mm-hmm. And essentially, he was an Olympic champion horse, and this is the family's distillery. And it was the family's horse back in, I think it was the 60s or 70s.
So we have a Mexican tequila with a French name.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
Mon Dieu, mon ami.
Okay, so we're sipping this first.
Yes.
What are we looking for? Tell me just quickly
about
the notes.
I mean, we're just looking, you're going to get a lot of fruit forwardness. Like, we'll talk about it a little bit, kind of the additive-free world of tequila. So this, you're essentially drinking an agricultural product.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what the farmers grow. This is what they distill. This is what they put in the bottle. So nothing else other than agave distillate and maybe a little bit of water in this one. So try to get that fruit forwardness, that kind of greenness out of it.
Cool. All right. Well, while you're pouring our next one,
we're going to turn to Chef Enrique Lomardo, who is a remarkable guy. He recorded a rock album. He's, by
David
the way.
David is really jealous about the rock.
I am. I'm so pissed off at you already. I can't even tell you. But he's also co-founder of the Seven Reasons Restaurant Group. You come on like a storm. He's got a Michelin-starred restaurant already, Imperfecto, which really just opened a couple of 2 years ago.
2.5 years.
Yeah. Not shabby, and a lot. So start off with your story a little. How'd you get from Venezuela to here?
I mean.
But we only have 10 minutes.
And
so.
Not on a plane, yeah.
No, I left my country because, economics, politics, and everything in Venezuela was so tough.
Mm.
So it was a country that doesn't offer opportunities. So I came to United States because we believe, as a South American, the land of dream and whatever. And I believe it, and I live there right now. So I left my country, came here. The first.
Where did you start? Like, what area?
I started in Baltimore.
That's what I thought.
I spent like 3 years in Baltimore. I opened a restaurant in Baltimore called, still open,
mm-hmm.
Alma Cocina Latina.
Yeah.
That was very successful.
There. It's delicious.
Very successful. And then because I started in Baltimore, I start, meeting my partners right now that I have in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And, they push me. And they, push me like, why you don't have a restaurant in D.C.? I mean.
And had you come to D.C.? Like, had you sort of taken stock of the dining scene in D.C. and seen what was happening here?
I mean, we did the homework.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 1 year evaluating all the restaurants around, what the menu looks like, how many seats they have, all the restaurants that they were successful.
Mm-hmm.
So we evaluate everything, and then we become with an idea,
mm-hmm.
with one idea. why we don't have like the best Latin American restaurant in DC.
Mm-hmm.
Not because there is not others, mm-hmm. you know, something that is completely different in a more elevated scene, taking, you know, tasting menus, creative, on the creative side and everything. And I mean, we bent for
it. So you started with Seven Reasons and that concept. You opened up on 14th Street. But in the last like 5 years, even with a pandemic, you've expanded pretty rapidly. So can we talk about
We can throw a rock and hit one of your restaurants.
So, yeah, so like, can we talk about how you decided like on the neighborhoods and the concepts
and how you made that happen?
We took
the opportunity because when we opened Seven Reasons, we were open for 9 months mm-hmm. at that moment and the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm.
And we had at that moment to adapt whatever matters to survive. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, I was like very depressed, like, okay, I mean, we just opened. We have to close.
Right.
But we adapt. We survive. We push in every single direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, opportunities start happening because we survive.
Sure.
You know, we push everything outside and people start reaching us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, how you survive? Well, we survive because we adapt to this and this and that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know.
This is David and Nikki Nellis. It's Foodie and the Beast. We have a full studio and it's so much fun. We'll be back in just a sec.
So last time Nick and I were in Georgetown, we just wanted to get some food and chill out a little. And we went to Tony and Joe's Seafood Place on the Georgetown waterfront. We had a great meal. We had oysters. I don't remember what else we had.
Well, the most fantastic thing about Tony and Joe's is, honestly, its location. It is right there on the water. You're looking at the Kennedy Center, and you're looking at the water, and there's all those boats going by, so you have great people watching. And that's whether you're dining outdoors on their amazing patio or dining indoors with their floor-to-ceiling windows. Of course, they have amazing seafood, like the oysters, usually local, but great lobster, great fish. And
they have great steaks there, too.
Yes, and they have steaks, too. It's just a great place to go for great drinks and great food with a view.
I love their line. They say, come for the food, stay for the view, and that's what you should do. Tony and Joe's. All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to chef and Michelin star holder. Enrique Limardo of Seven Reasons. And we were talking about your move down to City Center and what, I mean, it's different clientele down there. Yeah?
No.
Yeah. Clientele, I don't think
it's
completely
places.
Different. But the location is better. I mean, we spent 4 years in 14th Street.
And that was tinier.
It was
right?
tinier.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized we need to expand. We need to, you know, revamp the concept because it's our diamond.
Mm-hmm.
In our group, that's the diamond. So we got the opportunity to go to City Center, mm-hmm. and now it's a better location, better space.
But you also have an international clientele there that you don't have on 14th Street, let's be honest. I mean, the people that line up at the stores are, you know, I mean, I hear it's a polyglot of languages from around the world every Saturday.
I mean, when we were at 14th Street, we were more like a restaurant for the neighborhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now is the exposure is you know, more wider.
But you opened up Imperfecto. Can you just quickly explain that concept and then Joy?
Explain the name, too.
Which one? Seven Reasons, Imperfecto.
No, okay, let's go.
We don't have time for Seven Reasons. I know seven is your favorite
that's
number.
Story.
And okay. We'll be here all day. But
Imperfecto is, the concept behind is a combination or a fusion between Latin American food and Mediterranean food.
Mm-hmm.
But the concept behind the name is one of the most important things in life is imperfect things are beautiful. And the most important thing is the journey to try to achieve perfection, knowing that you will never achieve it.
In Japan, they call it Kaizen. Same thing.
It's something like that. So the most beautiful thing is try to achieve perfection, knowing that you will never achieve it.
I love it.
Because what happens if you achieve perfection?
You don't. You can't.
No. And what happens if you achieve it?
We all explode.
Exactly.
I don't know. There we go. Okay.
Okay, and then let's just quickly touch on Joy a little bit, because we love Joy. It's near our house. And
Joy is the first son or the first daughter of seven reasons.
Okay.
Because joy is one of the main reasons.
I feel like when you say joy, you should be like, joy!
Yeah.
Like,
joy know. Is one of the main reasons, mm-hmm. of seven reasons. So we try to revamp and to do something more like more approachable, more casual, more to a restaurant to day-to-day, you know, in a neighborhood.
Excellent. All right, we're going to have to, unfortunately, let you go. Tell everybody how we find you and your restaurants online and in life.
Always, on the web, Seven Reasons Group. And mm-hmm. if you go to the web, Seven Reasons Group, you will find all our restaurants, all the concepts, all the events we do, all the parties and everything.
Excellent. Great. Thanks, Chef. Congratulations. Good start.
Thank you so much.
All right, okay, back to John Dunnan.
So we were talking about the differences between tequila and mezcal, and we understand now what tequila has to be, like it's a designated from the area and how it's produced. Let's talk a little bit about mezcal and sort of the loosey-goosey rules with that.
So I wouldn't say loosey-goosey. I would say a little bit more broad spectrum because mezcal essentially—
You say potato, I say potato. Okay.
Nah, so you think of mezcal as, like as I had talked about, an agricultural product. This is what all the farmers did back in the day before laws got put on tequila and before it got governed and certain things said this is what you need to do to be tequila. Mezcal is kind of what everybody produces.
Mm-hmm.
But in the modern day, there are, according to the CRT and the CRM, which are the governing boards of agave spirits,
mm-hmm.
You're allowed to produce mezcal in seven states. You can use one of any 10,000 species of agave plants.
Wow.
You can ferment naturally. You could ferment with yeast. You could distill in clay. You could distill in copper. You could distill in steel.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of the key thing, which is gets back to that, everybody thinks mezcal is smoky, is as to where tequila has to be produced in an oven or steam cooked. Mezcal is done in an earthen pit. So essentially what these distillers do is they'll dig a 5-6 foot deep pit in the ground, start a fire with whatever wood is kind of lying around. And as soon as that fire is about to go out, they throw all the agave on top of it and then bury it and let it cook for like 6 or 7 days.
That's cool.
Where you're going to impart like that natural smokiness to it. Uncover it, and then they're going to distill it from there. So as I always said, like, yes, mezcal is smoky, but smoke should be a component of the mezcal. It shouldn't be the driving factor of it.
Sure.
So you're still going to taste some of the fruit of the plant. You're going to taste some of the distillate, which is why some people say mezcal is, like, cheesy or a little bit funky, and that's kind of that open-top fermentation.
Well, gotta love it, though. It's so good.
I mean, all right,
it's
what like are you pouring ultimate... for us first?
So I'll be pouring the Rey Campero Espadin. Mm-hmm. So Espadin is essentially going to be kind of the use-all be-all of mezcal. Mm-hmm. It's the most heavily cultivated, widely used. So if you're going to go get a brand of mezcal, chances are they're going to use Espadin. And that's strictly out of the fact that Espadin plants take around 6 to 7 years to reach maturity, as to where some of the other wild varietals that we'll try go anywhere from like 12 to 15 years.
Okay, great. So, we're going to get into it.
Cool.
All right,
so Sebastian Zutant, who is really my son from another father. We were at Comey about 30 years ago.
20, man.
Long time ago.
It was a long time
having
ago.
Having dinner.
Still a long time, yeah.
And this guy comes up, and he's got the last name Zutant, and I realized I'd been in business with your father for a brief moment, and we've known you ever since.
We have. We've watched you grow up.
It's true. Now I'm old.
Yeah, now you are old. You got gray. I don't even have gray, dude.
I mean,
well, you're never going to have gray.
That's also true.
Yeah, okay.
So let's talk about where you've been and what you've been doing.
Well, wait. Let's identify you. You're the co-owner along with your wife, Lauren Winter.
She's my ex-wife.
Ex-wife.
She's also my dear friend.
Ex-wife, sorry. Yes. Former wife. It's hard to keep
baby
track.
Baby mama.
I have a couple of those myself, so it's okay. All right. But you're at Primrose, which is kind of a French wine bar restaurant.
Yeah.
You also own Parachute Pizza, and you've got your own wine label, Lightwell Survey Wines, right?
Got it. Yep.
Okay.
Pretty impressive.
He could have told that story, but...
No, I like telling
it. Now David's
I'm so proud of him. My son.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Primrose and what's going on there, because I think we had you on right when you opened.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
But we haven't caught up on it.
So lots of stuff, pandemia and living through that on my own was pretty fun. Antonio was there with me, but it's all good.
Yes.
He crushed it. Anyway, so post pandemic, we've really kind of taken the time to refocus and kind of like relaunch. We relaunched. We closed for 10 days up until about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
We restructured the kitchen physically. We restructured the kitchen with the people in it. We restructured the front of the house with the people in it. We restructured the front of the house physically. Mm. So we did a complete makeover, spent a lot of money, got a bunch of new equipment, and really kind of like spent the time to hone what it is we're doing.
And what is it? So for people who haven't
we've always been a French bistro, right? And I think there was a period of time where we sort of like got I don't want to say we got away from what we were doing because that's not what it was, but really I just wanted to like streamline everything we were doing and focus mm-hmm. on the future and make sure that we're headed in sort of like a really elegant, refined, classic direction. So the dishes that you see now are less sort of like traditional bistro dishes and more sort of like France by the way of it would be more inclined to be like a rustic French restaurant in the middle of Provence, you know, so it's not like French onion soup. It's more like a Liège salad, which technically is from Belgium, but like right. but you see sort of like France in different parts of the world and how it's executed in different parts of the world. And the wine program has really maintained sort of a French program or a French focus, but we've added a bunch of really high-end, hard-to-get, sort of sought-after, quote-unquote, unicorn wines on the list. We've got a new cocktail director who's really kind of stepped up the cocktail game. Mm. We really wanted to focus on bringing ourselves into the future of the restaurant dining scene.
Especially in that neighborhood, because yeah. it is a neighborhood restaurant.
Yeah, and
legit, but it's totally. Also a destination restaurant,
it is,
right?
It
You've
is.
Got and, a bit of both going mm-hmm. on there.
Yep, you're absolutely right. I think the good thing about where Primrose is situated is the fact that it's right over the border in Northeast, right? So, like, it's mm-hmm. not as far as everybody thinks. Mm-hmm. And I think the second that people get there, they're like, damn, this is, like, literally a mile from where I live.
Right.
And, you know, it's, like, really close to Petworth. It's really close to Capitol Hill, things of that nature. And so at this point, we're making the push to sort of reestablish ourselves in the restaurant industry. Mm-hmm. And we're great in the neighborhood and all that jazz, but, like, I don't know. Like, I see really great things for this restaurant, and I see really great things for the people involved in it, and people really care about it and love it. And you know, it's time for a push.
Sounds like you had your own seven reasons for a revamp.
Yeah, we really started working with a lot of incredible people. Dear friends of mine own Audemars Farms in Waynesboro, where my winery's located, and they've got probably the best pork on the East Coast, and we've been working with them.
Can we talk about the winery?
Totally.
Since you mentioned it.
I did.
Launch a winery?
My brother and Ben, the winemaker, mm-hmm. started it in 2015, and we were making wine illegally for a couple of years.
Right. I remember the one with the pretty flower on it, right? Wild something, wasn't
That was
it?
My first wine that I made okay. with Ben, and that was a rosé that we made.
Pulling that out of the recesses
that is
of
crazy.
My mind.
And, you know, when she got out of the hospital, she said, what was that I had?
That was called Dahlia, and that's from yes. That's like my like goth wine because it was like named after the Dahlia murders. And so it was a rosé, and it had a black Dahlia on it.
Remember.
It was just like people were like, what's going on?
A little
like,
dark, but that's
yeah.
okay.
You know me.
Have you met?
Right. Yeah, right.
Okay, so
but the winery's doing great. We're launching our new vintage May the 5th at Primrose, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's a party called Pinco de Mayo. And we're launching our new rosé, and it's sort of like a pink party. Everybody shows up wearing pink, and there's a bunch of new wines being offered. I brought a couple of them, and we can taste
well,
them
can
as we go.
Yeah, so why don't we talk about what you just
sure.
poured?
Sure. So this is our sort of like luxury white wine, I would say, which is a stupid thing to say. It's like our higher end white wine. So this is Hinterman, which is not actually a word, but it's always a co-fermentation of Petit Mansing and Riesling.
Seriously?
You all right, buddy?
It went down the esophagus.
And yeah, there we go.
It happens. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I say it's sort of like our higher end wine is because it's a little bit more serious. Like it has a weight to it and like a
it
density
a
that
weight.
I think that like people associate with like expensive Chardonnay or some dumb mm-hmm. S like that.
This is a little bit of a digression, but how did mm-hmm. you get into wine in the first place?
Because that's he was a wine guy.
I got into wine because when we opened Comey, Johnny was like, I'll do the cooking, you do the front of the house.
Well,
and
not
I was
only
like,
that,
okay.
but then you were at Proof and yep. you handled all the wine with Mark Culler. And
rest
you
in
went
were
out
Red
to,
Hen.
Yeah.
Wait,
I mean,
but before that, when did you go out to California? You worked out in California.
And I was out there for a year in 06 making wine in Sonoma.
I mean, I could do your bio better than you.
Thanks, buddy. yeah, it's been a fun time. You know, like I've been involved since I've in wine since I started my like serious restaurant career, which was Comey, where it started. I was actually at Nectar. Do you remember that place?
Yes, yeah. I do.
Yeah,
with Jared
so I learned from Jared. He was sort of my
great
like,
guy to
my
learn
guy.
From.
And I started with him, and then left there and opened Comey, and then it just kind of and yeah, it's been fun.
Okay, so what else did you bring? What else are you pouring?
So this is actually our new vintage of sort of like a light crunchy red. It's mm-hmm. predominantly Chambertin, so it's a hybrid varietal that you see a lot in Virginia these days because mm-hmm. it's really good at like fighting sort of the baddies that like screw up grapes in Virginia.
Right.
So it's 65% Chambertin, which is like a super juicy, vibrant, full of life red, uh-huh. and blended with 25% Petit Mansing, which are really like weighty, acidic, white varietal that gives it some punch.
I feel
punch.
Like Petit Mansing is like everywhere now.
Yeah,
like it's a varietal I haven't heard a lot about. And then about 2 years ago, like this year, I was like, wait.
Yeah, it's again? A varietal that's from the southwest of France that's typically used to make dessert wine in the region called Jurançon. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they use it is because it's really floral and it's got good acid.
I'm going to have to jump
in. Yeah, we
have
to take a break.
We have a petite amount of time here.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break.
Sebi, tell
him. No, we're not going to end with him. When we come back, we're going to hit you for two more minutes.
We're going to come back for 2 more minutes.
This is David and Nikki Nellis. It's Foodie and the Beast.
With our boy Sebi.
And we'll be back in just a sec.
Talking to our main man, Sebastian Zutant. Along with the winery and Primrose, you have a pizza place.
I do. It's called Parachute Pizza.
Yeah.
What up with that?
Pizza saves lives. That's why.
We love pizza.
Right. Oliver Friendly, who is my business partner, and Aaron M., who is also my business partner. The three of us kind of Aaron is the general manager at Primrose, and Oliver is the executive chef, sort of like consultant chef. Mm-hmm. And so the three of us got together and opened up a pizza shop, and it's Sicilian by way of Detroit, so it's kind of thick and chewy and yummy and gushy and fantastic.
Like Philly, like tomato bready kind of
totally.
Stuff?
That's yes,
my,
yes.
Totally it's, my it's,
where is it?
It's inside Union Market, like mm-hmm. inside the Union Market.
Great.
So in the old Red Apron space.
You don't.
Yes.
You don't deliver it to
represent.
Represent. Yeah, no kidding.
Back in the day.
Yes.
Okay. And then you have this event. Just give us a 411 on the event.
All right.
And we'll wrap
so
you up.
It is at Primrose, starting at 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. On May the 5th. It's mm-hmm. called Pinco de Mayo. Mm-hmm. Tickets are available somewhere at Primrose something. I guess it's
all
Instagram. Go to Instagram for
Excuse
Primrose.
Excuse me.
Yes, sorry.
Where is it?
I don't know. Sam,
it's
you know?
On the list. Are you on it?
It's at the list. Are you on it? .com.
I can't believe I have to tell you that.
Boy, you have to tell me everything.
So nonchalant. All right. Thanks, Sebi. Let's go over to John Dinan again. John, tell us a little bit about Prestige LeDroit.
Biggest small company or the smallest big company?
Oh, you're big.
In the distribution world here in D.C., Maryland, Delaware. But essentially, we all started out as ex-bartenders kind of looking to take the city into a kind of a new dining destination and bring in newer products that weren't kind of the big name brands that everybody knows about. And it kind of we got in at the right place at the right time. And it was just right where the cocktail revolution was hitting D.C. We were there with your craft vermouths, your whiskeys that no one drank, your oddball spirits that no one had heard of. So
but you guys really... like your MO is really finding like the smaller producer, right? And sussing those out. And that's
we like working with like families. Like essentially like we like working with distillers, with importers, with growers, with farmers. Don't get me wrong, we have a bunch of quote unquote brands in our book, but like I wanna be able to tell the story of someone who started in the whiskey world 10 years ago and help you understand why they're making this product. Mm-hmm. Not just kind of slap a label on a bottle and throw it on a shelf. Mm-hmm. So we look for those rare, like those people who are really into it, those like heart and soul producers of products. And we all love to drink spirits and wine. So kind of.
Yeah, we know you guys.
Yeah, I bet
it
Chris.
Fell in hand in hand.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so what are we drinking right now?
So our first two pours were both Blanco pours. So Blanco Tequila and Blanco Mezcal. Mm-hmm. This is going to be our first age product. This is Mi Casa 9-year tequila. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about aged tequilas, you have Reposado, which is anywhere from six months to a year in a barrel. Añejo, which is anywhere from a year to 2 years. And then anything over that is usually what you refer to as an extra Añejo, or you can put age statements on them. But this is a 9-year in a barrel extra Añejo tequila from an importer.
Really
we
honeyed.
Just yeah, like, I mean, you get all that sweetness out of the oak there. Mm-hmm. The agave is still a little prevalent. Usually when you drink stuff this old, like the wood takes over, and it's almost like you're drinking like toothpicks or something like that.
But actually what I think is interesting is that it doesn't have the traditional sting on the end. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of, you already had some.
Let an expert try.
But it's really smooth, I
yeah,
guess
with
is the best
the,
way to say
I
it.
I mean, when you put stuff in a barrel, like you're going to get some of those wood sugars out of there. And like, and usually I can't stand using the word smooth, but like what I translate smooth
it's
to
very
is
bourbon-ish.
A little bit sweeter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
How did I know that?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I've been doing this a while.
All right.
All right. We're going to come back to you. Now
we're going to go green, baby.
Veggies.
Molly Gibson and her mom, Melissa Pepe, have opened up a store called Rooted 3 in Bethesda. So we're here to celebrate that. And they've also brought in their friend Mary Beth Olson, who came up with the idea for DC Veg Restaurant.
She's one of the people behind it. It's very true. All right, so let's talk about Rooted 3, because you guys opened, what, like how long ago?
Not even 3 months. We're still brand new.
Okay, so can we talk about the concept?
The journey actually started a while ago with Molly. She came home, I'm her mom, so sorry about that. She came home in ninth grade and said, we're going vegan. And I said, okay, here we go. And Molly took that and ran with it and has been learning and diving into this, everything from justice and peace studies with food concentrations in college, graduated, went out west to go to cooking school, vegan cooking school out in California, worked in areas out there. Was going to set up out there, and then the pandemic happened, and she's back home.
Okay. So what did you discover as you decided to go vegan and work with plant-based materials? What did you discover, and what were you not seeing in the market that you're like, I know I can bring this to Bethesda and do something really different?
I feel like there's a lot of replacement foods out there where you go out to eat, and it's sort of fake sushi, it's fake burgers, it's fake milkshakes and stuff like that.
Right, which and to me, with some of that, what I struggle with is like what's in those products.
Exactly. It's more processed. Some of it's, you know,
which
not
is the antithesis of eating plant-based.
But wait, no, there's also, I mean, really, what they say is that the real benefit is you're not killing animals or leveraging animals for milk.
I know,
milk
but I'm talking about how we eat.
Right.
You don't want to eat a bunch of
junk. But there's nothing
junk.
Healthy about it, the stuff that's out there, the other stuff, not your stuff.
Right.
Well, we wanted to open a place that's really focused on delicious produce. Mm-hmm. And we've partnered with some local farms that do organics, and we use seasonal stuff. And we just wanted the veggies to shine through and sort of spotlight that instead of doing a bunch of replacement foods and this and that. And we were hoping that it appeals to a wider audience that way, too, because it's its own category. It's not inherently just plant-based food. It's just really delicious food that happens to be plant-based instead. And I think
so
that's
so how does that manifest in your menu? Like, let's explain to people, like, you brought in a bunch of stuff today. Let's talk about the kinds of things that they can find there.
Yeah. So we have bowls and salads. We brought some salads with us today. Mm-hmm. You can do grains with them, or you can do just greens. We have some smoothies that are fruit-focused. There's not added sugars or anything like that. And we use some superfood powders in there, too.
The smoothies look like dessert.
Yeah, they look fun. We do drizzles with them and make
everybody's
sure that
they everybody's being very shy. I'm going to get a smoothie and see what it tastes like.
So what is David drinking?
He's drinking the Mango Mana. That one has mango in it, a little bit of raw Yang Thai coconut water, a little bit of turmeric, tiny pinch of cayenne, a little bit of coconut butter in there, too, when it's topped with coconut shreds in our raspberry tart cherry drizzle.
And then how did you come up with the ideas for your salads? Like, they look very buildable. So how did you come up with, like, what's in them and what was really necessary for you for the, like, flavors and the textures to, like, hit the right notes?
We wanted it to be really filling because I feel like there's a stereotype out there with plant-based food where it's just rabbit food and you get shredded carrots and you get cucumbers and you get some lettuce and that's it in most restaurants, and we wanted to stay far away from that. Mm-hmm. So everything is built to be really high protein, really filling, and have all these different components in it where you get a little taste of everything, including our fritters, which are air-fried. Those are protein bites for the bowl, and they come in different flavors, and those ones are tasty.
So can I come in? I mean, how late do you open at night? Can I drop
in
after work?
Right? And
yeah, we're open until 8:30 p.m., and with our cocktail menu, we're going to be expanding our hours during the summer,
too. This is beautiful.
Yeah,
this
very
is dinner.
Cool. All right, we got to get into DC Veg Week.
Yeah.
It's coming. Third year?
Third year, yes, and I can't take credit for finding it. I'm a co-founder as of last year, but Max Broad, who is a great advocate, he works on the Hill. He's a huge supporter of animals and all things veg. Friendly and plant forwardness. He created this, and I've been along for the ride.
Okay, so can we talk about what it is?
Yes, absolutely. It is a celebration of all DMV cuisine. So basically, each restaurant can sign up, even if they're
but they don't have to be plant-based restaurants,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And I had said, let's get Ruth Chris's Steakhouse. Like, we want everyone to sign up.
Well, because you know what I think is really interesting, and you and I have talked about this off air. 20 years ago, and I'm sure Chef could speak to this as well, and those in the food industry, if you had a vegetarian walk in to your restaurant, the kitchen would be like, give them the carrots. I mean, really, like they served like either a plate of pasta or like some vegetables.
Yeah.
There was no
some boiled
they did not,
French fries.
Right. They did not. There was not a thought process. They did not see it as a moment to work with incredible.
There was no respect.
Okay. And most restaurants you walk into, they already have plant-forward food, mm-hmm. right? So, like, you still have your meat products and your composed dishes, but the plant-based dishes are composed and thoughtful, mm-hmm. and dietary restrictions are easier to adjust to, don't you think?
Absolutely, 100%. I think people know there's a demand, and where mm-hmm. there's a supply, there's a demand, and it comes down to dollars. And a lot of these restaurants want to maintain their bottom line, and they want to be able to appeal to multiple different appetites.
Excellent. All right, so give us the 411 on DC Veg Week and how people can participate.
So we're having a launch party on May 4th mm-hmm. at Rooted mm-hmm. on Cordell mm-hmm. in Bethesda, which is going to be great. We have a bunch of VIPs this year. NBA coach Joseph Blair and TV personality Bershon Shaw are our co-chairs, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. So we've got our event on that night at 6 to 9, and then restaurants can sign up. We can still sign up. It's from May 6th to the 12th.
Okay.
And all they have to do is add a vegan menu item or even just do a promotion on some existing vegan menu item that you have.
Right. So it's super easy to
participate.
It's so easy.
Low lift.
And it's all over the city, right?
Yep. All over the city and Maryland and Virginia too.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So how are you guys participating? How is Rooted 3 participating in this event? Other than hosting the party, obviously.
Right, hosting the party, and we're already plant-based, so it was an easy decision to join.
Are you doing something special? Like, do you have a special price or something like
we're
that
doing
as a way to engage?
10% off of smoothies the week of.
Oh, okay, great. That's so nice. Let's talk about how people can find you guys and get in on all the information we heard today.
Absolutely.
Yep. So you can find all the info on rooted3.com, and our socials are rooted3foods on Instagram.
Give the address.
Yeah,
so
please.
People know where you are.
Yeah, we're located at 4916 Cordell Ave in Bethesda.
Great. Okay. And other than the list, are you on it.com?
DC Veg Week? VegDC.org or on Instagram at DC Veg Week.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. Thanks so much. Okay. I need to get my next chefs in. Come on. Let's get back to the table.
Are we taking a break?
No, it's not break time.
All right. Looks like break time to
me. You want to take a break? All right, I'll take a break.
All right, we'll be right back with Foodie and the Beast in a minute.
Great, thanks.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and our guests now, our friend Eric Bergman and Chef Yo Matsuzaki from Ren out in Tyson's Corner. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Why don't we start off, you want a little bit about Ren?
Well, obviously we do a little bit about Ren, but I should say a big thank you on air because in December, I did my other show, Industry Night. I had a residency at the Watermark Hotel and at Ren, and both Chef and Eric hosted me and my guests for that show for 4 weeks, which was really fabulous.
It was awesome to have you.
I really appreciate it.
Eric, you should have refused unless I was there.
Okay. but let's talk a little bit about what's happening at Ren. You guys have really been doing amazing things.
Can we start off by saying Ren is a gorgeous restaurant?
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that whole area of Tyson's Corner, which was dirt mm-hmm. a couple of years ago, is spectacular.
Yeah, Mr. Fairbank and Capital One have really transformed the area.
Yeah, they have.
Quite literally. But yeah, it's fun, and I think the other fun part is it's tucked away. You got to kind of find it, and so when you do kind of happen upon it, it's a nice surprise when you walk in, and it's beautiful, a beautiful space. But I think Chef Yo is really to credit for all the success of the restaurant. He's really the guiding spirit of the whole thing.
Well, Chef Yo, can we talk a little bit about Ren and how it launched and sort of what you guys are doing today?
So Ren's basically, it's obviously I'm Japanese, so it's a Japanese concept. But I used to work at a French restaurant, Mediterranean, Southeast Asian, Chinese, a lot of different restaurants. And they almost combine my experience to bring the contemporary Japanese cuisine. And the end, I want people to just a simple, enjoy the flavor and the taste. That's the kind of whole concept.
Right. And so now you're doing, but you have lots of ways that people can enjoy because it's a massive space, right?
Yes.
With a huge bar. So let's talk about like some of the things we can find on the menu, how it sort of stands out to other different Japanese restaurants in the DC market and out in Tyson's especially. And what people can find there.
So this is what we call izakaya style, which is Japanese tapas type of restaurant. Mm-hmm. So I want them to kind of enjoy a lot of different food on a small plate.
Mm-hmm.
So and they started a cold dish. So it's a couple, how much? Like a yellowtail sashimi carpaccio. Mm-hmm. And after I moved to the fried food or the hot kind of grilled food,
You have one dish, it's hot and it's fried. But it's like ridiculous. It's like
Tokyo chicken?
Yes, Tokyo chicken.
Yeah,
please talk about the Tokyo chicken, please.
That's the gluten-free kind of fried chicken. So basically, almost guilty pleasure. The call. Yes.
Is it rice flour? Are you allowed to tell me?
It's a top secret, but it's fine. It's corn starch and tapioca starch.
If you give him more tequila, he'll spill the secrets.
Yeah, yeah, more tequila, chef. Yeah. Let's see what's going on. And now you have more of a sushi menu. You're offering more sushi. Is that because, I mean, people just love sushi. Like, they adore it. So is that something that you decided, like, because you were doing an omakase?
Still do the omakase every Monday night. We'll do 45 Monday nights this year, kind of in 8-week blocks, but they sell out, you know, usually 60 days in advance. It's a great experience. Our executive sous chef, James Kim, is in charge of that program. Incredible, incredible experience overall. And with that success, Chef Yo and I were discussing adding sushi to the menu just because there's a lot of call for it. Obviously, it fits in the
in the concept. Well, there's not a lot of sushi actually in that immediate area, right?
There's a couple folks talking about it, but wanted to kind of always be
yet,
the first.
Yeah, right?
wanted to be the first on the block. So, but we kind of renovated one of our unused back of the house areas in the restaurant.
And,
so we have a whole separate station. We just launched it last night, actually.
Where do you sort? Because it's been a while since I was there. It's probably bunch of months, the yellowtail was like eating butter. Where do you get your fish? Because you're not pulling it out.
And
of the
I don't want to say that ProFish is an advertiser, but ProFish is an advertiser. Yeah. So go ahead, no pressure.
Some of the fish comes from a fish vendor, and we are resourcing from a Toyo's fish market from Tokyo directly also.
And what is it, FedExed in, literally?
Basically, one day they fly in.
Isn't that amazing?
It really is. I mean, it was that memorable. I mean, it was amazing.
So now that you're offering the sushi menu, what does that look like for people? What do you guys plan on doing?
So we have 5 nigiri options and 5 roll options. It's a tight menu to start, but you know, I can't describe it on the air except to say that, you know,
you have no choice because you're on
air. Because you're on the air.
I can't do it enough justice on the air, let's put it that way, because it's just unlike any other roles that you've had in the area. Super unique. You know, maybe you can talk about some of the combinations that you have there.
Some of the sushi roll called Akebono roll. It's Akebono means like a sundown color type of meaning in Japanese. But so inside a spicy tuna and the cucumber, top of the king salmon, and the white truffle miso, and then we're going to torch.
Blowtorch top.
Yeah, blowtorch.
I think what's interesting now with a lot of Japanese cuisine, I was with Chef Nobu the other night. He was in town. And I think what's interesting with sushi especially is that you are finding non-traditional items being used in sushi, not just here in the States, but internationally and in Japan. Is there some of those products that you're like, this would not be happening in Japan, but I want to do it now, you know, whether it's like caviar or gold leaf or things like that?
Yes, sort of, yeah, kind of. That's kind of idea, but yeah.
Chef likes caviar as well. We have that on the menu,
too. Who
doesn't
like caviar?
I know.
I mean, or who doesn't
caviar? You're not allowed through that door if you don't like caviar.
Okay, we got 1 minute left.
Let's talk about the Derby event.
Derby,
yeah.
Next week. Let's hear it.
Yeah, we're having Perch Fest out on the rooftop there at the Watermark and the Capital One Center. We are in Wren having a little Derby Day party, so everyone can get all dressed up in there.
We have to wear hats.
We love it if you wear the Fascinators, but it's not a requirement. Partnering with Maker's Mark on the event, giving us a lot of support there. We'll have some bluegrass music in there, some great bourbon cocktails, and just a good time overall. It's a big party. So tickets there are available at RenTysons.com or on Instagram there.
Excellent.
Well done,
all right,
kid.
Can you just give me your Insta handle so we can tell everybody where they can find Chef and you and all the good things that are happening?
Yeah, at RenTysons.
Excellent. All right.
W-R-E-N.
That's correct. Yes, like W-R-E-N. The bird.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to John.
All right, John. What are we drinking last?
So kind of save the best for last, kind of the more unique style of pours. What you guys have in front of you is a Pechuga style mezcal. And what a Pechuga style mezcal is.
God bless you.
Is essentially, they'll run a third distillation in this mezcal. And it originally started as a celebration of the harvest, where whatever fruit or whatever they were growing was prevalent would go into the actual still. And then as kind of a sacrifice to the harvest gods or whatever you would call it, they would hang a chicken breast in the still. And as you distill through, you're cooking all this wonderfully grown fruit.
So not vegan.
This one actually is vegan.
Okay.
So as opposed, usually you would get pechuga de pollo. So you would cook this like chicken breast, all the fats and the acids would drip down. You would distill through and come out the other
delicious.
Side.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah, and it essentially became a celebration of the harvest mezcal.
Mm-hmm.
So like kids,
you know, can you imagine some guy going at the very beginning, well, what do we do with this? We got one chicken breast, Irving. Yeah, what do we do with it? Throw it in the mezcal.
But, so this one actually, this would be a vegan pechuga. So there's no actual animal in this one. The distiller's sister makes Oaxacan chocolate. So essentially what they're going to do is they're going to put a bunch of her chocolate Woof. In the still, mm-hmm. and they're going to hang essentially like a gin basket with a bunch of cacao nibs up there. So you're distilling this chocolate. You're distilling through the cacao nibs. So you're going to get that nice kind of dark chocolate taste on the end product.
One more question, mm-hmm. John. So like when we all start drinking tequila, when we're like 18 and we're not supposed to be drinking tequila, yes. we all drank junk tequila.
Essentially.
Right? There's like a worm
everybody,
involved.
Everybody has that one story
right?
from college. Or
so not what me. Is that and why are we, how did it evolve? Like how are we here today? Because every celebrity has a tequila.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of the growing of the category as to where the big thing that's coming on right now is additive-free tequilas. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about it, but additive-free being that agricultural product that it is, where it's just coming from plant, it's getting run through a still, and in that bottle is going to be that plant and maybe a little bit of water and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
But over the time, being mass-produced and having these big monster brands, some are going to cut some corners, some are going to cater to people's flavor profile. And unfortunately, with tequila, you're allowed to add a little bit of kind of outside items to your final product.
Well, I've
like
always
a worm?
Wondered is agave is the plant bug resistant, or are they spraying the plants too?
No, I mean it's not. It's bug resistant up until it's ready to harvest. So as it's growing, like it's a very very like human bodies can't digest agave. Like that's how hardy this plant is.
Mm.
Very fibrous. So until it blooms, nothing's really going to eat.
Got it.
But I mean, going back to like kind of the additive thing, like Americans love sweet. So that's where you'll see some tequilas have sweetener in them. Some have coloring in them. And like, as we get into this world of additive free kind of farm to table or farm to glass alcohol, like that's where you start to see all these brands championing the fact that, hey, we don't need to put flavoring in this. We don't need to put sweetener in this.
All right. Well, I thank you so much for everything today. Can you tell everybody where we can find you or Prestige LaJoie?
I mean, just go drink at a bunch of local bars.
Okay. Like, say, is this Prestige?
Yeah. Now, we're Instagram. We're at Prestige LaJoie.
Mm-hmm.
And Facebook at Prestige LaJoie. Yes.
You're asking a question. Like, we don't know.
Yes.
Social media is not my thing.
All right.
I'm my handler here.
Okay, good. Thank you so much. Thanks for everything. All
thanks,
right, babe,
guys.
You want to say your piece?
Yeah, I just want to remind everybody, thanks to the Congress and the Senate and Joe Biden, Ukraine is getting money to fight that war, because if they don't win that war, we're all in deep stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there are still millions of refugees from that war and the mess in the Middle East and Sudan and lots of places. So just remember, when you're getting a latte, maybe you don't get the latte and you give some money to the Red Cross or the Red Crescent or to Jose's group, because there are a lot of people in, you know, we live a good life here, and there are a lot of people in misery.
Yes.
So don't forget.
On that happy note, I want to thank all of my guests for joining us in studio today. So much is going on in and around the D.C. metro area. Of course, you can go to thelistareyouwanted.com, if you didn't get that, to find everything you heard here today. And you want to follow me at NYCCINELLIS on all the platforms so you can see what I'm eating, what I'm doing, and where I'm going. We had such a great group in studio today. Thank you to all of you. Everybody else, be safe out there and have a delicious week.